If you continue to pray for me as I stand before you, that the Lord would bless us with the same liberty and thoughts that Brother Ricky's had this morning. That's certainly our desire this morning. I find it always amazing. What is it, you know, that I'm to speak on Sunday from one Sunday to the next Sunday? And you know, you get a subject on your mind, and you're looking at it, and you're studying upon it, you're meditating on it through the week, but it. And you feel like you got all the parts there, but you know there's just and Elder Roy Bowles knows what I'm talking about. It's just not there. You just don't feel like it's there. And then studying that sends you to somewhere else, and you think, well, maybe that's what I need to speak on. And you begin to study and meditate upon that, and you say, that's just not there. It's just not there. And then late last night, it got there. I was studying on that other one, and then another thought came to me, and I said, I think that's the one the Lord had me to speak on. So you pray for me this morning that this be of the Lord. And so if this sounds unrehearsed, there's a good reason for that. We would like to go to the book of Job. The subject that's on our mind this morning can be found in one word, and that one word is trouble. Trouble. Trouble is defined as an enemy or a foe. Trouble is defined as an adversary. Trouble is also defined as affliction and tribulation. All those terms there can be found under the definition of trouble. When we think about trouble, our mind goes to Job. Job was a man that knew something about trouble. Eliphaz said something in the 5th chapter of Job and in the 19th verse. He said, talking to Job, he said, "He shall deliver thee in 6 troubles, yea, in 7 there shall no evil touch thee." Eliphaz was saying that to Job. A man that now was acquainted with trouble. Trouble was Job's best friend at this time, like it or not. There were things that happened to Job, and it wasn't because Job was a bad man. The Lord told Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in all the earth? A man that feareth God and escheweth evil. Have you considered him?" You know what Satan said? Satan says, "Take down the hedge. Take down the hedge of protection and let me afflict him. Let me trouble him and see if he'll still serve you." You know what the Lord did? The Lord let down the hedge just a little bit. You know God's got a hedge around you this morning. I want to tell you something, dear child of God. Satan would love to have his claws into you just as much as he'd like to have his claws into anybody else. The hedge was let down a little bit. Job had a lot of things going on. He had a lot of cattle, had a lot of oxen, he had a lot of camels, he had a lot of sheep. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters. He was well respected in the community, no doubt. He prayed for his children every day, the Bible says. Every day. Job was out one day and a servant, one of his messenger, it says, came to him. And it says in the 14th verse, and it says, "And there came a messenger of the first chapter, and there came a messenger unto Job and said, The oxen are plowing and the asses feeding beside them, and the Sanhedrin and the Sabeans fell upon upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, the Bible says, Satan doesn't like to just poke and prod with you every now and then. The thief cometh not but to steal, to kill, and to destroy. And we're talking about in this life. And if Satan had our way with us, if the hedge was brought down, if the hedge of God's protection, His providential care, were removed from us, we wouldn't last a moment. Satan would come in with all that he has. While he was yet speaking, there came also another, and said, the fire of God is fallen from heaven, and hath burnt up the sheep and the servants, and consumed them. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee. Well, he lost his oxen, he lost his asses, now he's lost all his sheep. By the way, while he's losing all his herds, he's also losing all of his servants. While he was yet speaking in the 17th verse, starts off the same as the 16th verse. While he was yet speaking, one thing right after another, they never even got out of the mouth. One messenger never even got it out of his mouth before another one came from another direction. And said there also, and he said, while he was speaking, there also came another and said, the Chaldeans made out the bands and fell upon the camels and have carried them away, yea, and slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. And while he was yet speaking, three times in a row, and while he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the four corners of the house. And it fell upon the men, and they are dead, and I only am escaped to tell thee alone. I only am escaped alone to tell thee. Job knows something about trouble. Job knows something about affliction. Job can tell you something about persecution. Trials in his life. Now, he had lost everything that he had. He still had his wife, but you remember what his wife said? I would that thou curse God and die. Just curse God and die. There was no comfort in that. So Satan goes back to the Lord and says, let me touch his body. Let me touch his bones, his flesh. And the Lord said, you go right ahead, but you can't take his life. By the way, God is all sovereign. God has all power. And Satan can't do anything more to you than God will allow. The next thing that comes up on old Job is boils. Boils from the sole of his feet to the crown of his head. The only relief that Job could find was a piece of potsherd, a piece of broken clay, pottery. Perhaps it was broken pottery that he picked up when he went to his house and saw it caved in. But the only relief that he could get was a broken piece of pottery to try to scratch himself and to try to find relief. And then three men come, and you'll read later about the 16th chapter of Job, after they all had plenty to say, that Job says, thou art my miserable comforters. Job didn't have anything, and Job found no comfort in the comforters that were sent. He was a man man of trouble. They said about him in the fourth chapter, Eliphaz speaking to him, he said, in the seventh verse, "Remember, I pray thee, whoever perished, being innocent, or where were the righteous cut off? Even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness shall reap the same." Now, that's not an untruth. That's right. But it was just the wrong words that Job needed at the time. Because what the three miserable comforters were saying is, "Job, this wouldn't have happened to you if you hadn't done some great iniquity, if you hadn't been living in some great sin, this wouldn't happen to you." They're saying, "Job, evidently you're reaping what you've sowed. You're reaping what you've sowed." It was no comfort to Job whatsoever. Do you know that we have trouble in our life? Sure you do. Well, perhaps our trouble can't be compared to the trouble of Job. And thanks be to God for that. But I suppose we all know something about affliction. I suppose we all know something about tribulation. Job said in that 14th chapter, he said, "Man that is born of a woman is a few days and full of trouble." Jackie with little Olivia there, or somebody at work that's got a little child, I just want to say, hang on to them as long as you can, because it's just but a few days and they've left the house. You know that's right. You know you don't think about that when your child is this little, but when you look back and your child has left the house and your child has grown up, tribulation, the adversary, the enemy, the foe. A child doesn't think about those things. Excuse me. I can remember vividly when Megan was little, when she was happy, like happy little children are, holding her close in my arm, knowing that there'll be a day I'll be holding her because she's experiencing sorrow, because she's experiencing tribulation. And I wept back then. And you know that day's come. I've had to hold her in my arms. That little girl that was carefree, didn't have a thing to worry about, I've had to hold her in my arm while she cried over some trouble in her life. And you know that doesn't end with us, does it? We have trouble in this life. Oh, there's good times. Don't get me wrong. But I want to tell you, it's full of trouble. It's full of trials. It's full of affliction. It's full of the adversary, isn't it? We got three great enemies in this world. We got Satan. We got this old flesh. And we got the world out there that are always coming against us. That are always there to beat us down. If it's not Satan, it's the world. If it's not the world, it's me. All the trouble that we get into in this life, the troubles that we experience in this life, Satan is a real adversary. Did you know that? Satan is a real troublemaker. And Satan won't leave you alone. When you think you've got the upper hand, you better just hang on. Because he's not done with you. He tempted the Lord three times in the wilderness. In Matthew chapter 4 and in Luke chapter 4. And in Luke chapter 4 we read when Satan left, it said he left for a season. For a season. You know what a season is? We got four of them here in North Carolina. It's just for a little while. But you say, but Preacher James said, resist the devil and he'll flee from you. Yes, he will flee from you. But my friend, if you don't think he's not coming back, if you don't continue to look to the Lord, he's already got his claws into you. Satan cannot destroy your eternal salvation. Thanks be to God. But what Satan can do is destroy anything of value. And when I'm talking about value, I'm not talking about the riches of this life. I'm talking about the riches that we find in His kingdom. He can destroy the blessings of the child of God in this life and lure him away from the church. Lure him away from the truth. And we see that happen a lot of times, that many of God's people have destroyed themselves out in this world. Yes, heaven will be their home. No, heaven's not dependent upon what I do or what I don't do. It's like Brother Ricky said, and I advocated, it's dependent upon what Jesus Christ did on the cross. But our joy, our fellowship with the Lord and His people require an obedience in this life. And of following the Lord. The devil is a real adversary. He comes up against us. The flesh is a real adversary. It comes up against us. You remember when Moses was down there at Rephidim? And God commanded him to smite the rock. Now this was the first time God commanded him to smite the rock. You remember the second time He told Moses to speak to the rock. But he disobeyed God and he went and smote the rock a second time. That rock depicts Christ. And Christ was smitten once on the cross at Calvary. And our desires to God should be through prayer and meditation and in talking to God in this life because He is our great High Priest. But he went and smote that rock as he was commanded there at Rephidim. And out from it came water. You remember? Well, what happened right after that when the Amalekites were drinking? I just gave it away, didn't I? When the Israelites were drinking, the Amalekites came up against the Israelites. And you remember Moses went up on the hill. And he went up on the hill to pray to God. And Aaron and Hur were with him. And they held up Moses' hand as he prayed to God. Would got the victory that day, and you remember the word was that Israel discomfited the Amalekites that day. Discomfited. You know what that means? It means they just won that victory. They won the battle, but not the war. Discomfited them. You can see many times where the Amalekites came back and they were at war with the Israelites after that, but they discomfited them. There's a real warring. There's a warfare. There's a spiritual warfare that the Apostle Paul talked about in the 6th chapter of Ephesians. He gives us something. Listen to what he says. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. He says we wrestle against these. We war against them, he said in the church at Corinth. We're in a warfare with them. We wrestle with them. Now, the wrestling here is not talking about with fists. It's not talking about guns or grenades. But I want to tell you there's a warring that we enter into every day. And I want to tell you sometimes on the inside, I look pretty beat up. I look pretty beat up because old Satan has worked me over pretty good. But there's something that the Lord has given us. He said, finally, brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Put on the whole armor of God. You want to know how to gain a victory over Satan? How to win the battles in this life over Satan? Put on the armor of God that you might be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. The armor of God. Job knew something about trouble. He shall deliver thee in 6 troubles. Now if you go back and you read all the things that he lost, the sheep, the oxen, the asses, the camels, all the things that he lost there, including his children, you'll come up with 6. The Lord shall deliver thee out of 6 troubles. But I want to take this thought one step further. You know, the word, the number 6 in God's Word is the number of man. God created man on the 6th day. It's the number of man. It's not a completeness. It's the number of man. Man in himself is very incomplete. Man was required to work 6 days a week. He was required to labor in the fields for 6 years. The service of a Hebrew servant, the requirements of a Hebrew servant were 6 years. All these 6s here speak of man. It speaks of the things that we go against in this life. But I want you to see it's God that delivers us from these troubles, from these trials in this life. God delivers us. He is the great deliverer. He would go on, you know, when you go down there to the battle of Goliath, you remember Israel was on one side and the Philistines on the other side. And Israel was here shaking in their boots because there was a man named Goliath that came down into the valley daily and said, if there be one that can take me, let him come. And if he can take me, we'll serve you. If he can take me, but if I take him, you're going to serve us, Israel. Goliath depicts a man that is the works of man. The works of man. The works of man in instilling fear and having desire to bring God's people into captivity. You see, Goliath was what? 6 cubits in a span? Goliath's spear, a spear of And David goes down there into the field, running into the field. I love the picture and the image that is in my mind of a young ruddy boy, not hiding behind the bushes, or not trying to sneak up on old Goliath. He was a man that went down there to the brook, gathered five smooth stones, put them in his pocket, and went running as fast as he could towards Goliath. And it was there that he put a rock in that sling, and he threw it towards Goliath, and it sunk into his forehead, and Goliath fell over dead. Dead. Lucky shot? Don't think so. That wasn't a lucky shot. The Lord was a match. The Lord delivered Israel from their troubles that day. How many times has God delivered us from the troubles and the trials of this life? And how many times has God delivered us and we don't even know it? How many times have you been going on your way to work, maybe running a little late, and you get in a traffic jam because there's been a terrible wreck ahead of you. And you wonder, was me being late the providence of God? Would that have been me there? Oh, how God takes care of us in this life. He won the victory. And Israel went out against them and ran them out of the country. There was another man called Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Daniel who had a golden image. Do you know what the size of that golden image was? It was 60 cubits. It was a golden image. 60 cubits tall by 6 cubits broad. The number 6. The number of man. And every time that the instruments were to play, and by the way, you guess how many instruments there were? 6. And every time the instruments were to play, they were to fall down and worship that golden image. You know, man, from the annals of time, has had a desire to promote false worship of God. I want to tell you, there was a time when the old Baptists were in the dark ages. There was a time when we suffered great affliction and tribulation simply because we preached Jesus Christ and Him crucified. We can see over there in the days of Stephen, that Stephen was stoned to death for proclaiming Jesus Christ. Stoned to death. He didn't have any crimes. He didn't do anything wrong. He was preaching the gospel and they stoned him to death. And they laid him at a young man's feet, Saul, who later became Paul. All the tribulations and the trials of false religion, the dark ages, those that were martyred that we can read about in the 11th chapter of Hebrews, that were sawn asunder, that were killed and slain and stoned and beaten, because they believe what me and you believe this morning. You know, and it's hard for us to imagine such persecution just simply because of what you believe. But that's because we've been so blessed with freedom in this country. There are places in the third world country where you'll still be stoned for trying to preach what they call the truth, Christianity, that is not allowed. We've got a great freedom here. But there were three there that would not fall down to that golden image. There were three there that would not be swept away by man's false religion, that stayed their course towards God. Now Nebuchadnezzar wasn't happy about that. You know, the world won't be happy about it. And he heated up the furnace 7 times hotter than it ought to have been heated up, and he bound those three, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He bound them up, bound their hands, and they went to go throw them in the furnace, and the furnace was so hot that the guards that threw them in, they died instantly because of the heat that was coming out of that furnace. Those three Hebrew children were in there, and old Nebuchadnezzar looks in there, and he can see through the fire, and he says, were there not 3 people that we've thrown into that fiery furnace? And why do I see 4? trouble for the child of God that tries to follow the God in spirit and in truth. This world would have you believe something else. Why, I've gotten into arguments with people that just because of the practical part of the old Baptist, because we don't have musical instruments, just eats them alive. I've gotten that people have argued with me. We never even got over to the doctrine. And I'd say, brother, you've been sitting here giving me a hard time for 15 minutes. I said, I don't care if you have a whole symphony where you go to church. I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to gripe. You do what you want to do. But as for me and my family, we're going to serve the Lord. And that was Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were in trouble, but God delivered them out of their trouble. No, there's trouble that we... Israel was in trouble at the Red Banks. You remember that? The Red Sea? They were in trouble. What happened there? Moses said, "Fear not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord." The Lord delivered them from their troubles. The Lord delivered them from that army that was coming up against them. You can go over to the 6th chapter of 2 Kings and you can see a man called Elijah and his servant who were there. And Elijah's servant got up and he looked at it and he saw the host of the Assyrian army encamped about them, coming in to destroy them. And that servant went to Elijah and he said, "Wake up, master, how shall we do?" In other words, he's saying, "What in the world are we going to do? They're encamped about us." You know what Elijah said? He didn't say anything to that servant. He went on his knees and he prayed that the Lord would open up the eyes of that servant. And God heard his prayer and answered it. And when that servant's eyes were opened, he saw the host of God's army between them and the Assyrians. I want to tell you in this life, in our troubles, our eyes ought to be looking to the Lord. What did he say over in the 2nd chapter, in the 4th chapter of 2nd Corinthians, verses 17 and 18? "For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, while we look not on things which are seen, but on things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things that are not seen are eternal in the heavens." Our eyes, my friend, in the times of trouble, ought to be looking to the Lord. Now, there was one named the Apostle Peter who took his eyes off the Lord. And when he took his eyes off the Lord, as he was going across, walking upon his trouble, he took his eyes off the Lord and he began to sink down into his troubles. I want to tell you, in this life, dear child of God, if our eyes are not fixed upon our Savior, if our eyes are not fixed upon the great deliverer in this life, we'll begin to sink in a quagmire of trouble. But isn't it a gracious God that God, when the Apostle Peter said, "Lord, save me, I perish," that the Lord heard him and he reached out his hand and grabbed the old Apostle Peter up and he brought him up out of there. You ever been about waist deep in trouble? You ever been there? I've been about neck deep. You get about neck deep, you're never too far that God can't reach down to where you're at when you cry unto the Lord and bring you up. That's what it talks about over in Psalms 107. They that are trusting in themselves and are reeling to and fro like drunken men. When they cried unto the Lord, the Lord heard their voice and he called the waves and he brought them into their desired haven, it says. A place of comfort, a place of rest. What is that that Isaiah said in Isaiah 32? In Isaiah 32 and verse 1 and 2, we can read over there, verse 2 and 3, verse 2, "A man shall be as an hiding place from the wind, as a covert from the tempest, as rivers of water in a dry place, as the shadow of a great rock in a weary land." Oh, that we would look to the Lord and find comfort, that we'd find the deliverer in times of distress and in times of trouble. remaineth therefore a rest for the child of God. You remember that over in the 4th chapter of Hebrews. Let us therefore enter in. Let us therefore enter, labor to enter into that rest. In 7, there shall be no evil touch thee. God's number of completeness, of His number of perfection, you can see 7 all through the Bible. You can see it over in Revelations. It talks about the 7 churches of Asia, the 7 golden candlesticks, the 7 stars that are in His right hand. We can read about here's one, the 7 cities of refuge. Now the Old Testament just talks about 6. But I want to tell you, there are 7 cities of refuge. Go with me over to Hebrews chapter 6. Wherein God, for men in the 16th verse, for men verily swear by the greater, and an oath of confirmation is to them an end of all strife. Wherein God, willing more abundantly to show unto the heirs of promise the immutability of His counsel, confirmed it by an oath that by these 2 immutable things, in which it was impossible for God to lie, that we might have a strong consolation who have fled for refuge to lay hold upon the hope which is set before us. There's a refuge today. You want to know where that refuge is at today? I'll tell you where that refuge is at. That refuge is found in God's house. God refuge from the troubles and the trials of this life. You know, I got to get this thought. You know those 6 cities of refuge? You know why it was there? It was there for those that killed somebody unawares. In other words, it wasn't premeditated. Maybe it was an accident. Maybe the axe head falls off, it says, and kills somebody. They had a place of refuge. Now they had to go there because the family of the deceased, if they caught them, they could kill them. But not as long as they were in that city of refuge. And they were in that city of refuge, they were safe. And when the high priest died, all that were in that city of refuge could go home, guiltless of the crime, and nobody could touch them. I want to tell you something about our great high priest that ever liveth to make intercessions for us. I want to tell you about a great high priest that did die on the cross at Calvary. I want to tell you about a great high priest that gave His life for me and for you on the cross at Calvary. And because of that, dear child of God, when we leave this place of refuge, we'll go home to be with the Lord in heaven where He is at. It's a place that we can go and find comfort and rest. I want to tell you, this 7th rest that we're talking about here is not around this 7th trouble, being delivered from this 7th trouble is not a trouble that we find here in this life. What did He say? In 7 there's He shall deliver thee in 6 troubles, yea, in 7 there shall no evil touch thee. There's a day, dear child of God, because of the completeness of Christ's work on the cross, because of what He did, we will be forever removed from trouble. There will be no evil that will touch us. We'll be in a place, dear child of God, where we'll have no fears, we'll have no sorrows. There'll be no parting over there. What is that song says? The day it is. all troubles and all trials. We'll all go home to be with the Lord. Never depart again. We don't have to say goodbye to our loved ones or wish that we had said goodbye to our loved ones. They'll be with us in perpetuity. It will be forever in heaven. We'll be basking in the presence of a glorified God. I'm looking forward to that day. I remember the Apostle Paul that said over in 1 and 2 Corinthians, the first chapter in verse 10, talking about God who hath delivered us from so great a death, and doth deliver, and He will yet, and we trust that He will yet deliver us. That's Paul's hope. Even though Paul could say we are troubled on every side, but not in distress, persecuted, not forsaken, cast down, but not destroyed. He was trusting in God in this life. But I want to tell you something, my friends, there's a day coming when we'll be housed in heaven, when those troubles and sorrows will be no more. He shall deliver thee in 6 troubles, yea, in 7 there shall no evil touch thee. God bless you. I appreciate your time.